Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America Prospect Handbook Podcast. Special three-person podcast here today. J.J. Cooper, Josh Norris, Vince Lara. We're going to talk minor league player of the year. Pretty interesting debate. Pretty easy debate this year, actually.
I don't think debate is the word. It's more of a...
Consensus agreement?
This is the guy. At the end. It's like voting is water wet.
But before we do that, I do want to remind you that the Baseball America 2014 books are on sale. You can get all of the 2014 Prospect Handbook, the 2014 Almanac, all the books that documented last season on sale, because we know it's during the season right now, so you can get them at 40% off if you go to visit baseballamerica.com/store. Also do want to remind you, and I'm going to let Josh Bear Norris take this because he's very fired up about this. Go to Facebook. You can be part of our Great Parks calendar, Battle of the Ballparks.
We got some good battles going on. We just had one that ended, where three that ended, really. South Carolina looks like it beat LSU's Alex... Alex Box Stadium.
Burtman Field.
St. Paul Saints beat someone. And I think the El Paso Chihuahuas also.
We can see he prepared extensively for this promo.
Look, they're the losers. History never remembers the losers. But we've got three good matchups this week, and there's one near and dear to my heart, which I've already voted for. If you want to vote for Canada, you can vote for the Vancouver Canadiens. But if you want to vote for America, a good chunk of America, you vote for Eugene's PK Park. I am in no way biased. Also, there are two other matchups.
So yes.
Right. Unnamed.
Yeah.
There's only one that matters.
This is like, slipped you Josh's memory.
You could.
Did you vote in the other ones or just in yours?
You actually called me in here right before I was going to vote in the other ones. So. Okay. So I will vote on the other ones. But one of them is Charlotte versus Durham, which I don't know. Charlotte's a really nice park.
Right.
Durham's a really cool park that is right here. I feel... betraying Durham, even though it's five minutes from the office. And there is one other, but that's like voting for Perot, you know. Throw your vote.
No, but it is the Battle of Ballparks. We are having voting. We'll determine which parks get into our Great Parks calendar for next year. So there is a payoff to this. And we do think if you go to facebook.com/baseballamerica, you'll see all the voting there, and you can register your votes, and I don't think there's ballot stuffing is allowed, though.
You can vote once a day
per race.
Right, so yeah. Like if I wanted to go vote for Charlotte, Eugene, and other team, I could do that every day, once a day, until the poll closed, which is, what, the 15th, I think?
I don't know.
I think it's the 9th through the 15th.
But those votes are actually more contentious than the vote we had for Minor League Player of the Year.
Correct.
The Minor League Player of the Year, if you... or listening to this podcast, but haven't gone to our site or noticed all of the tweets that were, you know, bouncing around the internet today. It's Chris Bryant, Cubs third baseman. And I think I've been part of this the Player of the Year meeting for 11 of these or 12 of these now. And I can say, you guys have been here a little less. I can say they're not normally like this. Normally these are... let's get in a room, okay, and we're locking the door, and we're not getting out until we have an answer. This was, so, is there anyone who doesn't think it's Chris Bryant?
Actually, right. Last year I thought it was fairly easy, too. I was Buxton, and then there was some shouts for Springer and some other guys, but that was whatever. This one was, we have our weekly budget meeting, and at the end we're like, we should probably meet to talk about Player of the Year, and I think someone stepped up and said, well, why don't we just say it right now? It's Bryant. Anybody else disagree? No, not really. Okay, meeting over.
And the really... Vince, I mean, was there anyone else who you even considered?
No. No, and I can say that. But a month before that meeting, if you guys remember, and you were both in the meeting, we talked about Joey Gallo as a very real possibility. And I remember Matt Eddy, give credit to Matt Eddy for this, said, why are we so casually giving it to Joey Gallo back then, before... Gallo sort of leveled off, got to double A, and started striking out at a prodigious rate, 40% of his at-bats. And then it became apparent it was Chris.
That's interesting, because I the midseason, I remember debating this on Twitter, and I really thought at midseason it was a two-person race.
Mm-hmm.
There were Cubs fans who were like, clearly this is the Chris Bryant, and there's no other question, is there? And at that point, that was really at the point where Bryant had his monster first half in double A, Gallo had had his first monster first half in High A, and really at that point, I felt like that it was a neck and neck race because both of them were battling for the home run crown. Both of them, their numbers were almost identical. You know, Bryant had a higher batting average. Gallo had a little bit better on base percentage. Gallo was at a level lower, but Gallo was also a year younger. I mean, there was all these counterpoints, point, counterpoint, point, counterpoint. But as you just said, in the second half, Bryant goes up to AAA and really produced at the same level of AAA as he did when he was in AA.
Right.
Gallo went to AA and did not produce at the same level that he did when he was in High A. Still was productive.
Still hitting home runs.
Hit home runs and yep. walked.
Right.
But that was pretty much the extent of the Joey Gallo offensive contributions in AA.
Yeah, I think at one point he had struck out in almost half his at-bats, and that leveled off to 40%.
Yeah, he went...
Javier Baez level. totally. He reached the Baez level.
Right. He went full Cody Johnson, full Russ Branyan. But full Russ Branyan, speaking of which, full Russ Branyan cleanup hitter for Columbus Clippers for yeah. some reason. They wasn't a hired gun for the playoffs. They're really thinking about calling him up.
but no, it was, you know, we had questions in the chat about this. You always have it pitchers versus hitters, then it becomes a little bit more interesting. As far as hitters, the other guys who were kind of considered, Joey Gallo, we talked about, Jock Peterson
right. Mookie Betts.
Right.
Michael Taylor.
Right.
But... it comes down to when you have the guy whose prospect status plays a part in this for us. You can't Chris Colabello, as we said last year, great year. He's not winning the Minor League Player of the Year award for us. Right. When you combine arguably at least one of the best prospects in the game, who led the minors in home runs, slugging percentage, was top 5 in on-base percentage, and top 20 in batting average.
And stole like 19 of 24 to boot. And plays a good third base.
That was pretty easy.
Yeah, that really wasn't much of a debate. It kind of is an insult to the word debate.
But pitcher-wise, mm-hmm. Daniel Norris, Tyler Glasnow seemed like the last two guys standing as far as pitchers. Vince did, I mean, if you had to pick one of those two, yeah. if we did pitcher of the year,
right.
who would have you gone with?
I mean, I guess I would have gone with Norris only because of how quickly he moved. I mean, clearly... He was dominating in AAA. He started the year in Dunedin, and in Buffalo, he struck out 13 batters in his second start. And he was truly impressive.
You thought you were there?
I was not. No, I had foolishly went to Richmond.
Oh, yeah.
I foolishly went to Richmond.
John was there.
To try to get guys that somehow got hurt the day before I got there and didn't play. No, but if I was in the Glasnow or Norris camp, I'm saying to heck with both those guys. I'm voting Julio Urias. That's my pitcher of the year. I know he got very few innings, but what he did in those very few innings as a 17-year-old in the California League is outstanding. And he blew my doors off at the Futures game, and I think he's the real, real, real deal.
Plus, he's got a great Hollywood story. I mean, he's...
No, Hollywood wouldn't write that story. Yeah, that wouldn't sell.
It's beyond Hollywood, right? I mean, he's 17 years old with
if you turned that script in to Michael Eisner, you'd be back at Starbucks waiting tables.
But if we can turn back to the Player of the Year mm-hmm. race for a second. So I just finished up the PCL Top 20, and as I wrote in the lead to that...
Spoiler alert.
Right. Well, let's just say... That,
without giving anything away.
Right. That as good as Bryant was, it was no slam dunk, even within the PCL, because managers liked Jock Peterson so much.
Right.
So that's a testament to how good the PCL was this year, and less about Chris Bryant not being the overwhelming POI choice.
And that's the what I'm finding in the Eastern League too. I mean, you'd think it'd be Mookie Betts slam dunk, but Michael Taylor is getting reviews that are, you know, they're fan fiction, basically, coming from these managers. There's nothing he can't do. I mean, the names that he's getting comp to are, you know, you find them in the halls of fame, and people you shouldn't be comping players to ever.
And it was a monster year by Taylor this year in the Eastern League. I mean, Eastern League MVP, if I remember correctly.
No, Rookie of the Year. MVP was Steven Moya.
In Eastern League?
Yeah.
Even though Moya spent... How much time did Moya even spend there?
The whole year?
Oh, Moya. Sorry, I'm sorry. That was dumb of me. I'm thinking of the Nationals, Steven Souza.
Yes. No, yeah. Steven Souza got no votes in these.
Yeah. I was like, wait, but no, that doesn't make sense. No, yeah, Moya. No, yeah. I'm sorry. It is funny to me that, to me, if I had to vote in that, Michael Taylor.
Yes, the whole...
Michael Taylor. You were talking about a plus defender in center.
As I told you, if you had told me in January that I'd be writing about a 5-tool center fielder as the number one prospect in the Eastern League, I would have said, oh, so it's going to be Buxton, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nope. It might be Michael Taylor, but it might be Mookie Betts. We'll see.
It's an interesting debate.
It's a coin flip. I'm on one side that I won't spoil because you buy the magazine, but come to the chat, buy the subscription. But the league is stocked. I've got 32 guys for 20 spots, and I'm going to get yelled at for leaving 12 of those guys out by chatters and fans of whichever team.
I'm yelling at you in advance. You left so-and-so out. You're going to.
Okay.
I do the Saturday League and Midwest League list same way. It's like, so you don't like this guy? It's not I don't like him. There's 20 spots.
Right.
If we gave one spot to each team, which we don't, but if we did, most teams would get one guy.
If I did one spot for each team, there's two teams I can think of that I would be picking a guy that I don't think is a prospect. I'd be forcing it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's true, too, is that it doesn't... Talent is not distributed equally.
No.
In any way, shape, or form.
No, there's going to be a couple teams, I think 11, 10 to 11 players in this list might come from two clubs.
Same thing happened with the PCO. I asked one of the managers, so is there anybody else on your team you want to mention? He goes, nope, I think you covered it, and that was after two guys. One of whom I thought was a real stretch. So, I mean, and the PCO is 16 teams, so you'd imagine there'd be plenty of guys for the list. But I think I was starting to run dry about 30,
Triple
30 in.
PCL and the IL always are a little tougher because... Yeah.
They start to separate there.
Well, you get a lot of those guys in those leagues, their last prospect status was 2008, 2009, 2002.
Russell Branion gets a few more at-bats. He's in that
IL. I mean, Russell Branion was batting cleanup for them in the playoffs.
Nope.
I covered Russell Branion in 1995.
we joked about them calling him up. But can you imagine? You'd have Russell Branion and Jason Giambi in the same lineup in 2014.
Right.
That'd be awesome.
that would be awesome.
That's almost worth calling him up.
Get
for
Cecil
that
Fielder out of retirement. Make, I don't know, Jack McKeon manage him. It'll be hilarious.
But back to Bryant for a minute.
Right.
And the other thing that jumps out, I mean, this is going to be the story, you're already seeing it now, but it's going to be even more of the story as we roll into 2015, is this Cubs club, which is way more interesting to watch right now at the big league level than it was when the season began.
Right.
When the season began, it wasn't very interesting to watch.
No.
And I was with Jeff Samardzija.
Right.
But nowadays, and especially if you look at this club in 2015... It's fascinating, and it's also fascinating to read, like we announced Chris Bryant today, and you get tweets from, some of them I'm sure are people really trolling Cubs fans, but some Cubs fans are like, great, so now we'll trade him in 2016, or, oh great, another Kevin Ory, which is a nice callback.
That's a nice throwback,
wow. Big time.
I was expecting like, well, yeah, Tuffy Rhodes hit three homers on opening day, 1994.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. But
against the Mets.
Yeah. I remember that game well.
Yeah. Was that off Gooden? It was off Gooden,
I
right?
think so.
Yeah.
But and then
we get a fastball to the ear at some point.
but this is a truly fascinating organization as far as... I'll throw it open to both you guys. How far away do you guys think they are? I'll start with you, Vince.
Well, they're... If you listen to the rumors already that they're going to go heavy after pitching, John Lester being, one of the guys that just seems like a perfect fit there, they could be very close. And but the thing is... They lack the depth of a lot of contending teams. They even if they sign Lester, let's say the perfect world is they sign John Lester, and one of their other minor league pitchers makes a big jump. They're still their rotation's really light in that division. So they have some interesting. They will have some interesting position players, guys they can move around, especially, which is really great for them. I mean, they have Alcantara can play center field or he can play second base. Baez can play second base, or Baez can play left field or right field.
Or short.
Addison
Russell can play shortstop.
Right. Chris Bryant, could play third, or he could play right field.
If Anthony Rizzo went down, he could also play first.
Or he could play first. One scout told me that Bryant is an average third baseman right now, but an above average right fielder because he has a 70 arm.
So even though he's not playing out there.
Right, even though he hasn't played out there at all.
He did in college, so they have gotten to see it. He actually played some center in college.
But he profiled, the thing is, his bat profiles any place. Mm-hmm. So they'll have a lot of options. It's just about who can they leverage in a deal at this point, to me, to clear up some of that stockpile at short, and who can they get back, because they're going to need a deeper pitching staff to contend.
I mean, honestly, what I thought they were going to do at the trade deadline, I thought they had acquired Addison Russell. I thought they were going to flip some guys and get David Price, quite frankly, just to be complete sneaky sneakersons, I guess. I think they've got a lot of prospects, quite obviously. But I think the thing about that is you're going to be about 10 prospects you can list. They're not all going to make it. So I think it's a little farther off than Cubs fans. Well, I don't know about Cubs fans.
They're pretty pessimistic.
Well, maybe it's right in line with their thoughts. But they also don't have terribly many pitching prospects among them. They've got C.J. Edwards. They've got
Pierce Johnson.
Paul Blackburn is in there.
Yeah, and Hendricks.
Hendricks had a good start to
real good. Arrieta's, still be there.
They want to put prospects.
But my point is that building the pitching staff.
See, and I'm on more of the... I follow what you're saying, that they're not going to all turn out. But here's the thing to me. Okay, I don't think right now that they need to trade prospects for pitchers. And the reason I say that is that if you look at their lineup, and again, we know we're going to... Let's start with they're not all going to work out.
Right.
But I wrote it in the chat today. Let's say they need to get significant impacts from three to stretch it to four of their core guys. Let's say between Addison Russell, Chris Bryant, Jorge Soler, Javier Baez, Anthony Rizzo, Starlin Castro. They need three or four of those guys to be impact-type players. You know, if you want to use WAR, three WAR are better players. They need that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then, if we're just talking about position players, then they need, for 2015-16, they need some sort of contribution, useful players, not stars, but useful players, from some combination of Arizmendi Alcantara, Albert Almora, Billy McKinney, Kyle Schwarber,
Dan Vogelbach,
Luis Valbuena,
Addison Russell.
I should put Russell in that first group.
Okay.
You know, but, okay, that's like seven guys that we're talking about that they don't need every one of those. They need a couple of those guys to turn out. With that, if that happens, they know what they're paying the first baseman. That's already locked into the budget. They know what they're paying their shortstop. Their guy who plays shortstop now, whatever he's going to play.
Right.
That's locked into the budget. And they could obviously trade him, too, but that's locked in the budget. Other than that, they have enough depth that besides catcher, which is a question of whether they have a catcher now, everywhere else around the lineup, it should realistically be they have the opportunity to have a guy who's going to be pre-arb. So you are talking, okay, so you make $500,000, and you make $500,000, and you make $500,000, and you make all the way around. When you have that, what it allows you to do, they got to go out and get a Lester or a guy like that.
Right.
They realistically, though, they could do that, and then they can go and get another guy who you, and they can front load these deals. They can do the opposite of the usual thing is where you say, okay, we know that the last 2 years of this five-year deal are really going to bite us. But to make our salary structure work, we're going to pay him $12 million the first year and $20 million the last year when he's not going to be any good.
Right.
They can do it the other way, where basically you have a natural taper to it, which makes those guys even more valuable in the long run from the standpoint of, you know what, if that guy's making, you know, a reasonable salary at the end, they have that option. But they can go out and get, let's say they go out and get two guys.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, in-house inventory right now, they have Arrieta, who has had a very good year.
Yeah.
They have
Edwin Jackson,
who's had a terrible year, but is under their control, you know, for two more, I think. They have Travis Wood, who's had a poor year.
Yep.
They've had Kyle Hendricks, who's come up and been pretty good.
Yeah.
You have Tiyoshi Wada, who's been surprisingly good.
Really good, yeah.
You know, who's another, again, these are all back-end arms.
Right.
Then you got a C.J. Edwards, you got a Pierce Johnson, you've got, you know, further down, you got Dwayne Underwood, guys like that, Jen Hosang.
Right.
You're right. They got to get probably two guys. They got to go get a front-end guy, and then they got to go and get another Jason Hamill or something of the sort. But to me, you spend the money there to do it without giving up the prospects yet. And then what that allows you to do is, once you kind of get this, because they're going to have to sort out. 2015, to me, for them, is the sorted out year. You, as you've said, Josh, and you're right, not all these guys are going to turn out. That's what you spend 15 figuring out. You know what? That guy's not as good as we thought. But
So the thing about that, though, is you risk losing the shine of a player by taking 2015 to figure that out. So if you don't trade, if you don't trade one of those guys this offseason for a young, controllable starting pitcher, you may not have that opportunity again. So,
but they're still going to have another wave. You could trade Gleyber Torres.
Yeah, that's true.
You could trade Eloy Jimenez.
They
you
don't have to trade these. Or Almora could be that
right.
guy. Yeah, because he's a little further away. And
right. You've got guys who are further away, and not all these guys are going to be ready this year. Billy McKinney probably isn't ready in 15. Again, you're not going to be – he's probably not going to be the core guy of a big deal or anything like that, but he looks pretty good.
Yeah.
But what I do think it allows you to do, though, is that, you know, there's a lot of talk of how are they going to make all these shortstops work and all that. And I – okay, you can't have three shortstops on your big league roster. That's – admittedly, you can't. You don't want to rotate it around.
With infield shifts, maybe.
Yeah. But if you said, okay – Chris Bryant is primarily going to be a right fielder, left fielder, who plays enough third that it's not like he's forgotten, he's not giving up on the position. Javier Baez is your regular third baseman, you know, and then you say maybe Starlin Castro is your regular second baseman, Addison Russell shortstop, or vice versa. It's not like that this is the problem where you say, okay, there's just no room to fit these guys. Then you've got Soler and Alcantara also in the outfield. Rizzo's your other first baseman. Again, you find out, to me, those are the guys that you find out about in 2015. And you're right, if you may lose the shine on a couple of those guys. But what it allows you to do then is that, okay, by the end of next season, we're going to know more about Albert Almora than we do now. Right now, he's coming off of a pretty poor year.
Right.
But if he has a second poor year next year, okay, well, the shine's off of him a little bit. But if he has a good year next year, this year gets forgotten. Billy McKinney, is he going to be good enough to fit in that outfield? I don't know, but he could be. Kyle Schwarber, is he going to be good enough? Or is he going to surprise everyone by being able to catch, even on a semi-regular basis? If he can, that'd be valuable.
That would be the bonus of all bonuses.
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen, but you could see. Again, they've got a lot of options. I did think what Jed Hoyer said when talking to him for the Bryant story, that he made a good point, was he said, the A's have shown us, you look at the A's, you look at the Cardinals, they've shown the value of, let's not think of this guy as, this is a third baseman, he can't play anywhere else. Let's think of it as, this is a guy who can play third, first, right, and left. Or this is a guy, Matt Carpenter, can play second or third. Think of it that way, and when the injuries happen, because they will happen, you're much more covered than you are if you say, well, you know, it would have been great if Addison Russell could play short still, but you know what? We gave up on that as an option 2 years ago. That kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there was one scout who mentioned the defensive versatility of all of those Cubs players when I was talking to him about Iowa. And he said that all these guys, the great thing about them is that no matter where you put some of these guys, they're going to be plus defenders. Like a guy like Baez, he said, will be exceptional at second base and can still, and won't kill you at shortstop. So, I mean, they have that, and Alcantara is definitely that kind of guy too, who will play a terrific second base and is still kind of learning in center field. So they have great positional versatility with guys who can swing the bat.
And not only that, but they also, one other thing the Cubs have shown, I think, a pretty good job of, and in recent years, is that they've, the other little piece you'll fill in is that they've done a pretty decent job of finding kind of complementary players who've ended up being pretty productive. They got a good year out of Donnie Murphy, who then kind of turned back into a pumpkin. Luis Valbuena has been a very useful player for them. He's not a star by any stretch. He's a useful player for them this year. They're going to have
Bonifacio.
Eloy Bonifacio, they ended up trading. But one of the things that stands out with a lot of these guys is their role players have been the same thing. They've been the guy who can play a little third, a little second, you know, a little bit, you know, in Bonifacio's case, short and center.
Right.
They've been versatile guys. Now the difference is that the guys they got who could possibly do that, oh, yeah, by the way, they're guys who are middle-of-the-order impact-type guys, too. Not bad. It's going to be fascinating to watch them. I guess the way I'll put it is that if you were asking me to buy stock, what teams I wanted to buy stock in over the next couple of years, not because of what they have the ability to spend money, because you always want to buy stock in the Yankees because sure. even if the farm system doesn't look all that great, you know, you want to buy stock in the Dodgers because they've got three great prospects in there. And by the way, you can spend $450 million if need to, it looks like.
Right.
If you said, though, if I'm putting – I'll start with you, Josh, because we've kind of been going to, you know, a dialogue here without you for a little bit. So if I could pick – if you could pick – I'll put you on the spot, though. A team or two teams that jump out to you as far as you like where they are right now, where they're going to be in 2-3 years – who do you like?
Well, first of all, this exercise is insider trading, quite frankly. Second of all, we're all going to take the Cubs. I mean, for goodness sakes, we're all going to take the Cubs. So that's
there's not a team that... Okay,
that's one. That's one. And then the Pirates, I think, is another one because they've got guys upon guys upon guys coming up. I like the Red Sox farm system, too. Those guys, they've got money to burn as well. I think those are my obvious ones, Cubs, Pirates, Red Sox.
Yeah, I would go with the Red Sox first just because... This year was
disaster.
It was disaster, but they were so smart in leveraging Lester the way they did. I mean, no matter the backlash, they ended up getting a real asset in Cespedes and a guy they're going to have to spin off anyway because of his contract situation. But they'll make that work too. And they have so many prospects. You can just see them setting up for a big push for Giancarlo Stanton. Anyway, I like them going forward because they have tons of money, and they have tons of prospects.
Vince is doing an example of buying low. So we're going to keep this metaphor going.
And the Cubs, of course.
I do think the Red Sox, and I think the Red Sox, you hit on it, though. The Red Sox, in their situation, they're going to have to be active in the offseason because while they have a very impressive amount of prospect depth and impact guys, potential impact guys,
right.
But I do think in their case, whereas I say with the Cubs, like I say, okay, here's how the pieces fit together, could fit together like this. The Red Sox pieces don't all fit together if you just say, hey, we're going to bring all these guys up and try to contend. Because the Red Sox, the Cubs have that ability to say 2015 is the year that we hope to go from 70 wins to 85.
Right.
And that would be a big step forward. The Red Sox can't say, hey, our goal next year is 80 to 85.
Right.
So they've got this insane all-prospect rotation, it looks like, going in the, you know, Pawtucket for the playoffs.
All prospect and all left-handed prospect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know who's game five, but we also don't know if there is a game five.
But you have so we're going to see
Edwin Escobar, then Brian Johnson, the Eastern League ERA leader, then Henry Owens, the Eastern League number two in ERA, then Eduardo Rodriguez, the beast they took from Baltimore for Andrew Miller, who brings it up to 96 miles an hour with a really good changeup and slider, and who throws inside. I mean,
so,
my goodness.
And that's after already having promoted to the big leagues.
Anthony Renato. Alan
Matt
Webster.
Barnes,
Matt Barnes.
You know, and then Ruby De La Rosa is still kind of a fringy. He's a big leaguer, but he's not really fully outside of prospect status. But I guess what I'm saying is you can't go into next year if you're the Red Sox and say, hey, we're going to have four rookies in our rotation and three more in AAA ready to go if we need them.
And they have Mookie. I mean, that's a good start.
Right. But
who, by the way, probably won't have prospect eligibility by the end of the year.
No. You know, you got Mookie, but again, you've got a situation with them. Okay, they got to figure out. They got Mookie, they got Ruzny Castillo, and
Jackie Bradley.
And Jackie Bradley, who's speaking of the shine is off the prospect
right.
kind of guy.
Right.
You've got that. You've got, okay, they've got Xander Bogaerts. They got, okay, is
Devin
Will
Marrero.
Middlebrooks anything left? You got Devin Marrero. You got Sean Coyle, who could be a useful utility type guy.
Yeah.
You've got Christian Vasquez, the catcher, and you got Blake Swihart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Christian Vasquez, who's come up and thrown 50% of his runners out. My goodness. He's
right.
Hitting like 111, though.
So they are a team that does seem to me that have to, but yes, I think they're obviously a team you buy stock in.
Definitely.
You know, I do think the Cubs, I think the Pirates, you hit on them. The Pirates, where they're in great shape, is that you look at them for 2016 and you say they still could make the playoffs this year. And I feel like that this has been kind of a return they had a great year last year, and they kind of fell back a little bit this year. But you do look at next year and say, they should be better.
Right.
Especially when you think, okay, Jamison Tyone ideally would have been in the rotation midseason this year. You know, hurt, missed the whole year. Hopefully he'll be in the rotation by midseason next year. You know, you talk about
Kingham.
Kingham, you talk about Tyler Glasnow, who spent the whole year in high A, but shouldn't be that far away from at least, you know, like being I could see him being a useful arm out of the pen next September.
Go. He's one of those guys who could, if they get into a playoff series, he could be David Price and come in and just dominate out of the bullpen and change a game.
Right. You've got that. You've got the fact that they already have an outfield set for next year. Josh Bell's going to be getting some first base time. He's not maybe that far away from kind of finally finding the answer there that they've been looking for.
And they've got guys we hadn't heard about. I mean, they've got Elias Diaz coming up who ran away with the
Eastern League. We heard about him before, but he's better now.
He's on our depth chart. I mean,
yeah.
He ran away with the Eastern League Best Defensive Catcher Award, and there are other guys who think he's more than Best Defensive Catcher. And then there's Willie Garcia, who a lot of guys are really, really high on at AA, who's 21 and has, I think I wrote somewhere that might not be published yet, just a starter kit you can dream on. He's got the best arm in the Eastern League, I think, pretty much bar none. I think it's 17 assists, and someone said, if that's not an 80 arm, I don't know what is. He's got power. I think he hit 19 home runs. He can run a little bit. I mean,
and he's just a trade chip.
Maybe.
I was going to say, I mean, he's not going to play there.
No, probably not.
Unless they trade someone who's already, you know.
Well, unless it becomes a guy that you think is better than what you've got out there, eventually.
Right. But, and that's what I'm saying. I don't think he's better than any of those guys myself, but that's just me.
But they're, you know, the issue with the Pirates is their infield is so unsettled. I mean, they don't have a first baseman. They don't have a third baseman unless they move.
But they have a Josh Harrison.
They do have Josh Harrison.
They have like a Swiss utility knife that he's like, okay, well.
A Swiss Army MVP candidate. Yeah.
He's playing shortstop because we need a shortstop today.
And we got a right fielder because we need a right fielder today. He'll pitch tomorrow and he'll manage on Thursday.
But again, the same thing going back to the Cubs.
Yeah.
Josh Harrison showing the value of that. Like, oh, we have a need here. He can do that. And then tomorrow he can do something else.
But he doesn't profile at the corners, which is where they have the issue. I mean, they have Pedro Alvarez, who they don't know can play if he can play third, or will he play first, or hit, right? And they're going to lose Russell Martin most likely. I mean, they may extend themselves to keep him, but
that's where Diaz comes in.
Yeah.
And that's where Reese McGuire long-term comes in.
Long-term, but that's at least 2 years off, you would think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, so
at least. But, okay, I mean, the team we have not brought up that I do think, you know, I feel like the Astros are obviously another team that's in good shape going forward. But the thing that jumps out to me is my question with them is that, well, the reason I didn't mention them first is I have very little doubt that the Astros are on the way, I think in 2000, spending any money in free agency to fill some holes. In 2015, this should be a 500 team. You know, I think full year, hopefully, of a healthy Springer. Chris Carter, who took a big step forward this year.
Might lead the AL in home runs.
Giant step forward this year. You know, you hope that Jonathan Singleton's better next year than he was this year.
Mm-hmm.
You hope that your pitching staff, you're getting contributions from at least several of these young guys that they've brought up. You're hoping that Colin McHugh is, you know, again, Brent Strom, their pitching coach, to me, is one of the best pitching coaches out there.
Yeah.
We've seen the effects of Dallas Keuchel and Colin McHugh this year.
Yeah. But let me say this. The biggest thing they've got working against them is the Mariners, Angels, and A's.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they fit it, where's the opening?
And don't forget that the Rangers, who fell completely off this year, the Rangers are normally, I mean, this is the team that's been a World Series contender every year until this year. And this year they just had we're going to take your ace starter, your $20 million a year first baseman, your number one prospect in the game, shortstop, second baseman, and I don't know, your entire rest, your pitching staff, pretty much, and they're all gone. You know, they'll be back next year. Yeah, it's very difficult that way. And my other concern with the concern I have with the Astros compared to some of these other teams is that we know with the Pirates, okay, so who's their core guys? Well, it starts with Andrew McCutchen. It should be Polanco. You know, you kind of know who their kind of core stars are.
Right.
And a pitching staff.
Garrett Cole.
Mm-hmm. You know, you know where the core stars are. When you say with the Cubs.
John Holtzcomb.
The same with the Cubs. You look at it and you say, okay, it's Anthony Rizzo, it's Starlin Castro, it's Chris Bryant, it's Jorge Soler, maybe it's Javier Baez. Even if you're being charitable, saying maybe it's not. And then it's Addison Russell. I mean, those are the guys you say, okay, they got to get their core production from theirs, right, from those guys. With the Astros, it's Jose Altuve.
Right.
We forgot about him just a minute ago.
Yeah.
It's Carlos Correa, who's coming off of, you know, leg injury, but I think is going to be a star. Should be a, you know, is a, got a high chance to be a star. Is it George Springer?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely.
And I'm worried a little bit. I mean, I think he's going to be a very good player. I don't know, though. The strikeouts do still concern me about whether he's going to be an absolute impact player. That's the question. You know, you
that's
guys,
more of a question about Singleton, I think, about that. Because he
Singleton, I'm not even putting it. To me, Singleton fits in that. When we were talking about the complementary pieces for the Cubs, I put Singleton in that group. Like, your hope for Singleton is that he's a very useful player for you. I think you're asking too much of him if you expect him to be kind of a star type guy.
Oh yeah, but he'll have, just because the power is such a declining part of the game, he'll have that value. And he's also a really good defender, at least according to scouts. I mean, they're surprised how good his hands are. And so he'll be useful just for that. He'll walk, he'll hit 25 home runs at least.
Singleton?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, so I think he'll be, I think you can upgrade him a little bit in how you're thinking about him.
I do like the strikeouts point with Springer. I remember bringing it to you at some point this year, about a month and a half into his tenure. I said, you realize George Springer leads the AL in strikeouts, and he didn't come up until whenever.
Right, and that's, to me, that is, you know, that's a concern. Not that he's not going to be a useful player. I don't think there's any question about that. But my concern is that the difference between, that's why I didn't bring up Chris Carter as one of their core anchor guys. Because, again, I think you can get too hung up on strikeouts. But if strikeouts basically mean that you don't post a batting average and an on-base percentage, you know, that above average, that's when it becomes an issue. Chris Bryant had the highest strikeout percentage, strikeout rate, of any Baseball America minor league player of the year we've ever had. But it was 27%, which is in that range of, you know,
you're nearing red flag area.
But not, you know, and there was a whole lot of walks that came with it. Now, if you were nitpicking Chris Bryant, you could say he had a little over 400 batting average on balls in play this year. He hits the ball really hard. He's always probably going to have a high one. Yeah. But that could drop back down. If that dropped back down a little bit, say he posts a 360, well, then he's a 280 hitter and not a 320 hitter. Okay. I'll take 280 with 40 homers. Right. Sign me up, please, and I'll be, you know, thrilled.
Right.
But that's, to me, you know, that'll be the interesting thing to see with the Astros. But I think you're also right. They also have they're in a division. The Angels will hit a cliff. I mean, the Angels are the best team in that division right now. And the question is when does the cliff arrive? Their farm system, everything that was not bolted to the floor in their farm system was traded away this year. Understandably, and I think they did a great job by doing that, in that they didn't have anything worth that you say, well, we can't let this guy go. They fixed a bullpen that was terrible into a strength.
Right.
They really have turned themselves, I mean, they're the team that made the trades at the deadline and before the deadline that turned them into the difference between being a potential wild card team and being a division champ, which is a dramatic difference.
Right.
But you do look at them and say, 2017, it's very hard to map out how they could be good with the new rules.
Absolutely.
Because they can either then spend in free agency to try to stay. The only guys in their lineup, position players in their lineup, who are under age 30 are Mike Trout, CJ Crone, and Cole Calhoun. That's it.
Oh, you could see a backslide next year.
A good
start
there.
Yeah, but you could see a backslide next year, I think, with them. I mean,
yeah.
It's amazing how good Pujols has been this year compared to last year, for example. So I mean, if I were looking at the AL West, I wouldn't worry so much about the Angels as I would about you know, the Mariners or the A's
and the Rangers. To me,
and the Rangers,
because to me the Rangers are the team, like you say, okay, they're going to have to make some moves in the offseason. Well, they're going to have a middle infielder to trade, which has always got value.
Maybe even two.
Yeah, but you know, yeah, and maybe two. I think they got one. I think if they said, we're going into next year, if Luis Sardina's starting, I'd be a little worried.
Right.
But if they said, we're trading Profar, or we're trading Odor, or we're trading Andrus,
yeah,
they're fine. They could trade one of those three and say, and Luis Sardinas is our backup plan if one guy goes down.
Right.
They could do that. On the pitching side, they will get the majority of these guys back. So, yeah. Okay, that...
They'll have Holland. They'll have Darvish. I mean, that's pretty good top two right there. And
they got, you know, and the, again, a slew of guys who've been hurt as well. They should get a number of those guys back. This is a team that they get, you know, we got to see where Prince Fielder, but they should get Prince Fielder back.
A healthy Chew.
You know, you've got all these pieces. But again, the other thing, though, is they have guys. Joey Gallo, by midpoint of next season, should be able to give them a boost if they need it.
Right.
They've got, you know...
Alfaro,
who can help them. I just don't know if he'll be ready defensively next year, because those... Still frightening behind the plate at times. But yeah, I mean, as a top... Mazzara, Nick Williams.
Can I go back a minute and buy a different team?
Okay.
I'm going to buy the Nationals.
Oh, yeah. I should have mentioned them, too.
I'm going to buy the Nationals really hard and with all the money I have. And I'm going to live in a van for a while. And then when the Nationals mature, I'm going to buy a really big van.
But the funny thing is when you say mature, they're one of the better teams in the NL right now.
Right. That's like buying Apple. You're buying Apple at its very... You're starting to see something.
Yeah.
You're buying Apple like at its peak, 50, and then you think it's going to go up.
You're right, buying it when you're like, oh, what is this company?
But I follow you.
Fruit, you know?
I follow you completely.
I mean, the prospects they have are stunning. Just on the Hagerstown club alone.
Right.
I've seen Giolito. You've seen Giolito. He's legit. He just needs to stay healthy. You can talk for 4 hours about
Reynaldo Lopez.
Yes, we saw Reynaldo Lopez and JJ saw God.
Yeah,
you know.
He's not Giolito, but
he's Giolite.
Yeah,
wow,
I like that.
He's, nice.
You know, if you're saying that your second best pitching prospect on a low A team is the guy who throws 95-99 and has allowed one extra base hit in the last 51 innings, sign me up.
And another addendum here. This is a testament to good scouting over money. They signed Reynaldo Lopez for $17,000. That is less than a major league player will make this month.
Yes.
A call-up
yes.
will make this month. They signed him for that, and they got a guy with 96-99 with two pretty good off-speed pitches.
You got Michael Taylor. You got to figure out room for Steven Souza.
Right.
Who I misconfused with Stephen Moya earlier. You know, you got Wilmer Defoe, who's a potentially useful guy.
Yep.
We're going to talk about Spencer Kaboom, who's on that same team, could be a useful. He's coming off of an arm surgery, but a catcher who's pretty interesting. Again, who's a lesser prospect, but they've got a lot of guys, and they don't have a lot of spots to put them in.
Right.
I mean, look at their rotation. Strasburg, Gio, there's more.
Jordan Zimmermann.
I'm missing. There's more.
Tanner Roark has been
really good.
Yep. And then bullpen stocked.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I want some of that stock.
Well, I bought it all too bad.
But no, I do think that they are a team. They are a team very much equipped, especially, again, when you look at their division. Okay. You look at their division, you say, the Phillies are bad now, and the Phillies are headed towards, you know,
yeah,
Death Valley depths, because it's not getting better.
The farm system is ghastly to the points of depression.
Right.
It's J.P. Crawford.
I mean, you got cheesesteak, Philly. Enjoy it. It's pretty much
but,
it.
You know, but no, they've got an old team with a whole lot of payroll and they keep being surprised that people don't want their old players with a whole lot of payroll still to come.
For studs.
Right.
Right. It reminds me a lot when I see the Phillies now of the 65 Yankees, like that late 60s Yankees when everybody could see it happening except them. You know?
It's like, oh, there's not. Well, who's the next Mantle? Who's the next Maris? Right.
Can I pause here to say this is probably the first I remember the 65 Yankees?
Well, I didn't say I remember, but let me just say.
No, but it is. Like, there is a great thing written about in that. What's the book about the 64 series? October 64.
Oh, I think I have
it.
I have a Stan book.
Yeah.
And they're like, you could see, like,
the breakdown.
They
aren't
coming. And really, it comes down to, hey, and we're going to sell it to CBS. And it's going to be run like... Speaking of being run by a corporation, you look at the Braves in that division. And while the Braves have done a good job of locking up young talent, you know, who should be at the peaks of their careers, their farm system's not very good right now. And they've been saddled on a team that does not have... the payroll flexibility to be saddled with bad contracts, they've had some of the worst. B.J. Upton's contract, you know, like, if it wasn't for Dan Uggla, B.J. Upton's contract, we'd be talking about, wow, that may be the worst contract out there.
Right.
Can I also go back and suggest another stock to you guys now that I've bought all the Washington stock? What about the Toronto Blue Jays?
I'm less buying that one than the Nationals.
And but...
The reason I'm saying that is that I think they are always going to have a trouble in that division because it is a... Even though there's been a lot of drop-off in the division this year, you have an Orioles team that has now done it enough years that you have to say they're a power.
They're the first... They're above 10 games up in that division since 72?
79.
79, okay.
Yes. I was going to say, we are family. And I do remember I watched that World Series.
Right.
You know, right. I had my parents would tape it, and I had to watch it in the mornings. They wouldn't let me stay up, but they didn't mind if I woke up at 4 in the morning to watch it.
Wait, you guys didn't have Blu-ray in 79?
I know, that was amazing. We had a VCR. We were really excited. that was rare. I mean, like, the tapes at the time were gold. I had to use the same tape. I didn't get to keep the games. I had to use the same tape for every game.
My point being, they've got Aaron Sanchez coming, who looks like, at the worst, a dominant force out of the bullpen, who... could start and be electric. They've got Dan Norris coming up, who's a left-hander who throws 97.
Yeah,
and they've got great. That's where I was getting. Yeah. They got Stromania, who's making life easy for us short people everywhere. And he made Javier Baez look really bad yesterday.
I hate to say it, but that's happening a lot. John Holdscomb made Javier Baez look bad.
That was one of the worst pitches I've ever seen swung at since Manny Ramirez. Against Hideki Arabu, swung at a ball.
Wow.
Had to be 3 feet out of the strike zone. I think he had somewhere to go.
See, an Arabu reference you would not have expected. 1965.
It's 1997.
I know, but still.
But no, the problem I have with the Blue Jays, though, is that in that division, is that I do feel like the Rays figure out a way every year. I know that they've dropped off the last couple of years, but they're still a contender. The Red Sox we just talked about, like, they're in that same division. And the Red Sox, I feel like the Red Sox farm system is better than the Blue Jays. And, oh, yeah, by the way, they have on top of that the financial advantage of being able to toss around an extra 50 or 100 mil.
The Jays don't have positional prospects that are ready to contribute. Because even Dalton Pompey, for
a little way away,
whatever you think of him, the general consensus is he's less bat than he is other parts of his game. Mm-hmm. So
I have one scout say, you know, just unequivocally, he's Devon White. He is Devon White, period. That's what I wrote in my report. And
which is interesting because
I see him more as a center fielder who's a leadoff type. I mean, I think he fits back into that generally you think of him as a very good complementary piece.
Right.
That's a valuable commodity. But again, my worry with them is that I don't know. The Yankees, if they were the Phillies, you would say that they were headed towards a massive crash.
Right.
Because they have a pretty equal number of
unwantable contracts.
Onerous contracts.
Right.
They have almost no young players at the big league level that you say they're going to build around. Dylan Betances accepted.
No, that's not where I was going. Look. Someone on some board the other day made a comparison between the Yankees and the Phillies, and it was kind of funny. Albatross first baseman, check. Albatross left-handed pitcher. Cole Hamels is less of an albatross, but he'll get there. He's getting his wings. Check. General manager who's been there since the beginning of time.
But the difference is there's a difference there, though. Brian Cashman, you know, say what you want, but he's built winners. We can't say that about Ruben Amaro.
Well, yes, you can. I mean,
Gillick's
team.
His job was to keep the team that was already, like, I mean, what were his major acquisitions that were the key parts of them being winners?
I mean, Cliff Lee was his.
Right.
Yeah. But
Roy Halladay was his.
No. Right. But again, those were, and
Roy Oswalt was his.
Okay, I'll give that one even more, because the others were, like, they had financial wherewithal to do them. I guess I got in some ways give him credit for this, but he was handed a team where it's like, here's your first baseman, here's your second baseman. Here's your shortstop. Here's your third baseman. Here, you know, it was basically a ready-made, whereas Cashman turned over the first team he had and won again.
Right.
Ruben Amaro has not shown that he can turn over the first team he had and win again. Cashman has, the same way that, like, again, like you with the Cubs, that's something I do think, you have a front office there who's shown they deserve some expectation that they can figure this out. Because they've done it before.
Yeah. If not for 2009, though, Cashman would be under the same kind of heat as Amaro.
But arguably, he's under heat.
No doubt, but not the same kind of thing. Just because he's kept them in contention, whereas the Phillies are going to crater. I mean, it's going to.
And they it's arguably cratered.
I was going to say, they've already. The last
worse,
2 years.
You know, like, I mean, because they have nowhere to go with that team. It's not like they're going to be able to say. I mean, unless somebody trades a boatload for Cole Hamels and they start to dig out that way, but you know they're stuck.
I do think that the Yankees are headed. It could be a pretty rough stretch by Yankee standards here,
right.
But again, they have so much money that it is fascinating though how the game has changed though in that. Money does not pull you out of it nearly like it did.
Right.
Money can function as handcuffs, too. I mean,
absolutely.
It's locked you into Mark Teixeira. It's locked you into Alex Rodriguez, which is, I mean, he produces a little bit now. It's locked you into CeCe Sabathia. It's locked you into Brian McCann. It's locked you into Carlos Beltran.
Prado, even if you like Prado, you agreed to take on $22 million for the next two seasons. So, as valuable as a player as he is, I mean, I think you could argue that's a lot of money.
Did I mention CeCe Sabathia?
Right.
I mean,
no, it is true that you all these free agent deals and are done in a way that you know that the last few years of them generally are going to be awful. You hope you get a lot of bang for your buck before then. And what we're seeing time and time again, the Reds did sign that Joey Votto deal not that long ago. That contract is already a franchise record.
Verlander.
And the one contract that they didn't sign, Robinson Cano. I mean, he might make the playoffs.
Right. But again, long term, that's not going to hurt him.
No, that's not going to hurt
him. Short term, it's going to hurt him.
Yeah, short term, it's going to be very painful.
But the problem they have is that we are in a CBA system where it's designed to just funnel money into spending it unwisely at the big league level. That is... There's two. You can't spend it in the draft. You can't spend it internationally. Those are both limited now.
They're limited with penalties. Although the Yankees just went Scrooge McDuck on the Dominican Republic, Venezuela.
But again, they effectively are limited. They're now next year. They're going to be limited.
And again, let's bring that full circle to the point about Reynaldo Lopez. They're going to be limited. But if you're smart,
you can still
find a good guy.
But what I'm saying though is that you are limited. Well, for all the talk about we don't want a salary cap in baseball, all that, we have a salary cap in everything but at the big league level. And so what that means is that the only way if you're a big market team that you can really throw your weight around financially is two ways. You can sign Cubans who are, Cubans and Japanese players who are veterans.
Or Koreans. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Asian or Cubans players.
Right.
Or you can sign on free agents. And the thing with the free agents is because there's enough money in the game now, almost all the good free agents, that first year or two of free agency is often being bought out, which just pushes you over to, hey, instead of it that you're signing a 27-year-old to a contract, you're signing a 30-year-old or a 31-year-old, just at that point where you get that contract looks awful really quickly.
And you can throw your financial mud around by signing the best talent evaluators and the best coaches.
But there's no giant bidding wars going on.
There's not giant bidding wars, but you can help. It doesn't hurt.
Right, but there's... But
signing somebody away from someone?
But we don't see that happening much. All I'm saying is
the Dodgers did that this offseason, did they not? They signed a bunch of guys away from other clubs.
I think there is some of that going on. But I do think, again, that's even like... if that's a way that if you were... You could pick any team out there and... If they made that their philosophy, they could go out and get whoever they wanted because the amount of money that we're talking about there is so small in the grand scheme of the revenues of these teams.
Maybe it's an ancillary part to a philosophy. It doesn't make a bad team good, but it makes a good team great.
And I do think there's definitely value to that. But
I think I've approached this to you as far as coaching goes. Does Mookie Betts become Mookie Betts in a different organization that doesn't see his future as maybe a center fielder or... identify the swing flaws that he has and help him tap into his natural athleticism. There are a lot of athletic guys out there. There are a lot of guys out there who are more athletic than Mookie Betts, but they aren't going to become great baseball players. And, obviously Mookie's not a great baseball player yet, but he certainly looks like he has the chance.
And that's one thing that John Manuel is always talking about is what happens to players just because we were talking about the Yankees, we can talk about the Yankees in this instance, where what happens to them, why don't they develop in that system? And that's part of the problem, he thinks, with why guys, why the Yankees don't have a better farm system, is they don't develop players. They get worse when they get to the Yankees, and that's a key issue. Why aren't guys getting better? Why aren't they getting coached better in the system? Why aren't they becoming better players?
That's almost like a whole separate podcast.
Right.
I mean, we'll talk about take it away from them. What happened? What was the difference when Eduardo Rodriguez, a 20-year-old left-hander we talked about earlier, went from Baltimore, where he looked like an ordinary 20-year-old left-hander in the Eastern League with good stuff and potential, to Cy Young with the Portland Sea Dogs, where he got a .87 ERA and is already looking amazing? Did Bob Kipper at Portland just say, hey, you know, you might want to raise this or stride a little bit farther? Boom, and you've got a different guy. Is there a scout out there who saw him with Bowie and identified him as a trade chip and said, you know, we can fix this and we can make this a really good piece? You know, I don't think Baltimore or whoever in this case, this is just a placeholder for the metaphor, I don't think they know what they have.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with Escobar in that case, too, because for all what the Giants said about him being a strike thrower and that kind of thing.
And they have the ninja. They have Dick Tidrow.
Right. I did talk to somebody about him after the trade, and he said, Escobar was not a zone pounder. He was a guy who pitched away from contact because he knew he didn't have the fastball that he had had previously. And so it'll be interesting to see what the Red Sox do with him now that they have, because he's still really young. I mean,
I guess you can watch tonight, right?
On TV. Right. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm interested to see what they do with him and Heath Hembry for that matter. So.
Yeah, we're excited. We got the Durham Bulls as they normally are in the Governor's Cup Finals. I do say as they normally are. Charlie Montoya and the Rays deserve a ton of credit.
Montoyo.
Sorry, right. I thought I said Montoyo.
No.
Did I say Montoya?
Yeah.
Oh, I did. I apologize, Montoyo. But you know. They deserve a ton of credit for what they've done. Charlie is there. It doesn't matter what the team is. It seems like when you turn around at the end of the year, they're there. We could actually see a repeat of last year because the Omaha Storm Chasers are also in the PCL finals. So,
and the AAA championship game this year is just 2.5 hours away in Charlotte.
Road trip.
Beautiful BB&T ballpark.
Yeah. You ain't kidding. that's a 4A ballpark.
So we're going to wrap this up. We've got an hour here. That was a fun podcast. We digress as we often do, but they're fun digressions.
I think we have to go back with a stopwatch, which I think we have a few of around here, just to see how long that JJ monologue was on the Cubs.
Sorry.
That might have been a record. But that was a good one. It was quality. But
yeah, it was excellent.
I can make a sandwich here. Is there a bus coming?
Apologize for hogging the podcast.
No, but, it was great.
But thanks, Vince. Thanks, Josh.
Thank
for
you.
For them, I'm JJ. Thank you for the download, and we'll be back again next week.